Welcome to Fort Lauderdale's primary purpose Big Book Study Group Thursday night, Alcoholics and God. This is a step series. And we don't have a joke for you today. I'm so sorry. I know. What's an alcoholic's favorite book, everyone?
Tequila Mockingbird.
Oh. Very nice, very nice. Thank you. Thank you for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated, turn off all your devices, those that might make noise and distract other people. And take this time to get connected with God. Let the craziness of the day just drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everyone ready? If so, let's begin. And now we're going to do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's on the left and right side. And let's see. God.
Let your light shine through me like a fog light, so that those who are lost in the night will find your love through me.
And now I asked a friend to read There is a Solution. It's from Big Book. Page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news that the book carries for those who suffer from alcoholism. Norm, can you come on up? Everybody give my hand.
Thanks, Katie. Hi, everyone. Recovered alcoholic. My name is Norm. And first time here in 2019. I'm glad to be back. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what psychologist William James calls the educational variety. Because they develop slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that an alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is content prior to investigation, by Herbert Spencer.
We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know that. Now, please refrain from disturbing others by talking and constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or just turn them off completely. Now, to introduce our speaker, he's on his first. His name's Peterman. I'm really excited to hear him speak.
Okay, thank you. How did you say my last name? You made me Irish. Off to a good start. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And first things first, again, thank the group for having me back here. I think I've done this about 5 or 6 times, and they keep inviting me back. And I'm very grateful to be here, a part of this group, and get to share. Michael, who's not here, is usually back there running the show with the rest of the trusted servants here, who I think we should really give it up for them for just a great job they do here. One of my favorite places to be on a Thursday night. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol, and I'm very grateful for this gift of sobriety. I'm very grateful to be brought to a place called recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I do know what it's like to be in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and claim to be a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous, and even at times claiming I'm recovered when I'm not really recovered. I'm still in a place of recovering and experiencing a lot of the symptoms of the illness in Alcoholics Anonymous, and wondering, when is the wheel going to change to make me be okay? When is God going to love me enough so I can be okay? And what I found out, that God loves me so I can change. God loves me all along. And not if I change, I'll be granted his love, but he's with me when I'm in the trenches, when I'm under a bridge in an abandoned building, or I'm right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's consistent. And what had to happen to me was to experience complete breakdown of me and experience the death of self. I love when folks tell me I'm working on myself, and what I'm doing is I'm giving the enemy artillery to fire. And the last thing I need to do is work on self or know myself. Anything to do with self has got to be cut away from me. The death of self is successful living. And it took me a long time to even get to that place. It took me years out there drinking and doing non-conference approved dry goods. It took me in and out of treatment centers for a while, and till I was brought to a place on June 23rd, 1988, when God finally stepped in and separated me from alcohol. And as Bill says, for the last time. And if I stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, with regardless of what's going on outside of me in the external world, sometimes you find yourself really up against life and life seems to be unfair. But if I chop wood and carry water and do all the spiritual disciplines that I get to do, somehow self stays away and I get to stand in the light. What I've come to find out is I can only do as good as the light I'm standing in. And sometimes we're in the dark and don't even know. We need someone to say, hey, you're still in the dark and you still sound like, look like, and behaving like the old person. In our big book, it talks about what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. And what it looks like now looks like what it was like, then nothing has happened. And I'm wondering, you know, keep coming back, don't leave till the miracle happened. The miracle's happened. I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. What am I going to do to nurture this? What am I going to do to enhance this experience? And I have found for myself, it's way beyond going to meetings. Meetings are one side of our triangle, the fellowship, the unity of our fellowship, the sacredness of our fellowship. But meetings alone are not going to treat what I suffer from. Only God could, and what if he was sought? What am I doing to seek? June 23rd, 1988, I had six treatment centers behind me. I had gone to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had submitted to the meeting makers make it a remedy. And for some that works, usually the hard drinker or the moderate drinker. But I'm the guy on page 21. I need something more. And I didn't know what that was until I was brought to my knees. And what I'm happy to report to you, although it may not sound like good news, but it is, that we can bottom out in Alcoholics Anonymous. We can experience a lot of the symptoms of alcoholism while we're making meetings. Yeah. Because when you take the drink away from me, what happens is my alcoholism starts to work again. Because what I did was pour booze on alcoholism. It sounds like it doesn't make sense, but it's a fact. I pour booze on my alcoholism, and you take away the drink from me and the other stuff from me, and I am sitting in the middle of alcoholism, and meetings are not going to treat that. That's been my experience, but only God could and would if he was sought. The question I ask is, what am I doing to seek this power? And now I can go to my religious community once a week and do all the things they ask me to do. And I can even pray twice a day. And I can meditate three times a day. And I'm still stuck with me because I haven't experienced the destruction of self-centeredness, of selfishness, of just me. And the only remedy I found that will do that is after I get to three is the 4 through 9 work. Really, really in the middle of that, doing it. Because to drink is to die. Doing the steps as if it's life and death, because that's what our book tells us. To drink is to die. It's life and death. So I'm not doing the steps because my sponsor told me. I'm not doing the steps because all the in crowd is doing it, because the big book's gotten popular in certain circles. I'm doing it because if I don't, I'm going to drink. And if I drink, I'm going to die. My life depends upon having a spiritual transformation sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, and nothing less than that great fact. And when I'm in that place, and I'm in that place, is I'm open to being taught, which means when the sponsor comes at me and challenges me, I don't push back anymore. Because what's pushing back is the ego. It wants to ease God out. In June of 88, with six treatment centers behind me, I found myself living in an abandoned building in Lower Manhattan, Alphabet City. And panhandling, and not bathing, and not eating, and living the life of a street bum. Didn't plan on getting there. Not when I got drunk at 14. That was not the plan, to be homeless in 1988. When I got drunk at 14, the plan wasn't to go through 7 treatment centers and get my family to lock the door and say, you can't come back anymore. And be very, very lonely on the streets and just going out and hustle up money, getting a pint of whiskey, go back to the hallway. And that was my jitterbug all day long. And I would drink, as our book says, to oblivion. And you go along the way and you try to take your own life at some point because the bottom is so painful. And you know deep down inside there is no way I'm going to stay sober. And the torment is so great that we get to a place where taking our life looks like a good thing to do. Looks like a solution. It's a way out of this misery. And the very same person, me, if it said, well, here's a big book, let's go through it. Well, that's a little radical. I'm looking to take my life. I can get free with the book. The book? I don't think so. And I keep going along what I was doing. And I'll tell you something, what happened to me on June of 88. For years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I meant this from my heart, I would tell you that I surrendered on June 23rd, 1988, huh? I made a plea to God on June 23rd, 1988. What I've come to find out, because as we awaken, we have new experiences, we become more open-minded, and we start to really get a relationship with this God. My job now is to know God, love God, serve God in this life so I can be with him in the next. That's it. There's a lot of things that want to get in the way of that. But what happened to me in June 23rd, 1988, I was surrendered, and I was taught that by a friend, and he says, let's look at the facts. I did not have the ability to surrender or quit or stop. That was way beyond me. I did not have the ability to surrender. Because on June 22nd, 1988, as bad as it was, and I don't remember too much, there was no thought of, I'm going to stop tomorrow or today. It's, I need to drink now. But something happened, a divine intervention. I was given this surrender. And how that happened to me, God gave me his first touch. And it was a gift of desperation. And what I found out in 31 years of being here, that often God's way doesn't look godly, sound godly, or feel godly, but it's very much all God. And the thing that's getting disturbed and uncomfortable is my pride and my ego and my need to control. Because after I put down a drink, I still have a control issue. I think most of us will say that. We do. That I'm seeking control to prove that God exists and really loves me. As manifested in when I pray, please give me this. And when I don't get it, well, God doesn't love me. On June 23, 1990, I was surrendered. I was given that gift of desperation, and God surrendered me. And how that showed up was the very, very same God who I despised and loathed was the very same God I went back to and begged for mercy. Please take me from this. I don't want to die. Those were my words. That was given to me. It didn't come from me. Like most of the things we get in Alcoholics Anonymous, we take credit for the miracles, and it's no more a miracle. We take credit for accomplishments and don't give credit to God. And then I'm just in the middle of nothing. That came to me, not from me. Please take me from this. I don't want to die. I was not thinking about AA on June 23rd, 1988. In fact, if you told me about AA, I would tell you it doesn't work. It's a cult. A lot of strange people in there who never drink. Don't trust them. Then they pass a basket and they want your money. I knew there was a hook somewhere. And they talk about this God guy. But God split me open like he does with many of us. And that can happen when we're on a drunk, and that can happen while we're in sobriety. And it doesn't feel good when we're split open like that, but it's necessary, because only in the breaking open of me can God's light shine through. And very often I'm looking over there and God's right over here. And when I do that enough, he will stop everything. God will remove. I have found this recently. God will remove all things from me, the things that I need, think I need the most. Money, property, and prestige, relationships, whatever it might be. God will remove all of it to have me glued to him. And anything in the middle of that, it's going to go. And here's why. I made a commitment to know God, love God, and serve God in this life so I can be with him in the next. And he really thinks I mean it. So everything's got to go. And in his way, in his time, he will provide again. And every once in a while, my ego says, well, I don't know if I want to do this. Maybe I can just be a Joe and just go to meetings once in a while, sit in the back of the room, have some coffee, and out the door, and get all the stuff. But I'd rather bear the pain of waiting for God now than to go on without God and bear that kind of pain. So here I am in this hallway. Please take me from this. I don't want to die. God split me wide open. And in recovery, he's done that. He did it to me with about, I don't know, 10 years sober. Split me wide open again. I was standing in a parking lot in New Jersey. Some friends had taken me out to dinner. I just got out of a divorce, and she took everything. And I'm left there out of work and no money and no nothing. My house has got a boyfriend living in my house. Now, how did I get here? I go to meetings. I help people. Where's my piece of the pie? And I stood in this parking lot. I looked up to the sky, and he says, God, I am done running my life. I'll do anything you ask. I'll go anywhere you want me to go, do what you want me to say, anything. I don't care. And I called up my sponsor. I told him what was going on. He said, we're going to go through the steps again. It's not the answer I wanted to hear, but he knew better than me. Because self got in the way again. The ego starts to reconstruct on this path. And I'm a fool to believe that my ego won't rebuild itself. And the first tip-off is when I think I'm humble, I'm no longer humble. When I think I'm spiritual, I've just lost it. But somewhere in the chopping wood and carrying water and trying to just make our way and keep the ground fertile and the calluses on the hands and the sweat on the brow and I'm just chopping wood and carrying water, that's when I stand in the light. But recovery has to be the most important thing in my life, because if it isn't, I can't have it. And if it isn't, I can't keep it. This has to be everything. And I was brought to death's door in 1988, where 31 years later, I still cherish the seat I sit in. And I still seek this guy with the desperation for Johnny Man. That doesn't make me better than anyone in this room. It's just my story. It's just my walk. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Do I get frightened? Absolutely. Do I get angry? Absolutely. Do I fall short all the time? But I get in the saddle and keep going to get right with this God. Because, thank the good Lord, I don't have a first step problem. I can. But I understand, as my sponsor reminds me often on Monday nights when I speak to him, that I'm mentally ill. Peter, you know you're mentally ill. Because what my actions can show, forget the words, what my actions can show is that I don't believe I'm alcoholic anymore. I didn't pray today. I'm not alcoholic today. I'm in charge of my alcoholism. I'm not going to meetings regularly. I'm not alcoholic. Now I can tell you, oh, I know I'm alcoholic, but based on my actions, I show you I'm not. I'm not writing inventory at night. I'm not alcoholic. I don't have a first step problem. Things are good right now. And what I forget is, even though I'm not thinking about a drink, and I haven't thought about a drink in many years, thank God, or other substances, those things are always thinking about me. My alcohol, that drink, that pint of whiskey is obsessed with me. Huh? Because I'm alcoholic. Its goal is to get me one more time. So although I'm not thinking about it, it's thinking about me. And although I haven't acted out on this defect, that defect is pursuing me. But God is pursuing me too. Which one am I going to take? I can't serve two masters. And God's going to any length and will use anything and everyone to get my attention, to bring me back home. And will remove things to get me there. Whether I like it or not, us, me, called to sanctity. And whether I like it or not, born to be a saint. Everyone in this room, we're God's children. Everyone's born to be saints and called to sanctity. Now, what I want to do with that, I do with it. How free do I want to be? Go to the ocean with a thimble, I come home with a thimble full of water. How free do I want to be? And if I'm experiencing freedom in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't I want more of that? I know when I was drinking, I want more drink. If I'm drunk, I want to get drunker. I don't say, well, that's enough. I'm feeling it now. I'm going to drive home. No, just I'm a glutton. I had no clue what I was going into my fifth treatment center. I thought I was a nice young fellow who was misunderstood and overserved for a long time. You know, alcohol, you know, a nice guy with alcoholic overtones. And I get into my fifth treatment center, and I start to understand what I suffer from, not by what the counselors who never go to meetings, who aren't even alcoholics, some of them, who give me charts and graphs and tell me identify my feelings, that wasn't helping me. But I was starting to understand what I was by my history, by my getting in there. I start to really understand what I was up against when the H&I, bless their hearts, would come in and present a meeting to the treatment center, because they're like me. I don't know who this counselor is. They go home at 5 o'clock. I never see them at a meeting. But the H&I guys, they're sitting in the meeting with me. I hear them talk. When they come into the meeting in my treatment center, they're telling me about alcoholism. I say, yep, that's me. But I had no clue what I was doing my first 5 treatment centers. And I still believe I can control it. I can maneuver it a little bit. I'll do less of this and more of that. There was no way I was going to quit for good. Now, AA tells us a day at a time, but they trick us. They mean forever. You tell the new guy, just a day at a time, no guns. Yeah, forever. You know. Bill was smart. He sold us a good one. And then I sit down in 1988 with the sponsor, like a real sponsor. A sponsor whose recovery was so important to him that he had to pass this on. And he wasn't like back in Brooklyn. He was gruff. He was a straight shooter. He had no time for feelings and issues and touchy-feely AA. He didn't care about my feelings. He cared about my life. And we opened up the big book, and I start to learn what I was up against. He also walked with the big book, which made him very unpopular in certain circles. But he was the only man shouting from the rooftops the solution and the good news to what was killing me. And I didn't like a lot of things he told me, but he snapped me to attention because I knew he was speaking truth. And very often when I hear truth, even now, it makes me uncomfortable. And what's getting uncomfortable is the head, the mind, the pride, and the ego, where all my illness lies. You know, I could try to, I'm going to be in the present moment. I'm going to have positive thoughts. That'll last me to that front door. Because I'm using my power to do that, and I don't have that power. And my sponsor sat me down, and he showed me 45 pages in the big book, 43 pages in the big book that talks about step one. Then we throw doctor's opinion in there, which is about 10 or 11 pages. And there's a couple of pages in chapter to agnostics, the bedevilments, which is about unmanageability. All the steps consist of about 88 pages. Step one takes up like two-thirds of that, if you think about it. That's how vital this is, because they knew I was coming in the door, and they said, this cat's not going to get one paragraph or one page or even a chapter. We got to do overload on him. We got to talk about the mind. We got to talk about the body. We got to talk about current unmanageability with the bedevilments. We got to talk about, throw him a solution that it's God, the psychic change Dr. Silkworth talks about, or the spiritual awakening, necessary, vital for someone like me. Vital, life-giving when I do and threatening when I don't, like the organ, a heart. If it's beating, I'm good. If it doesn't, I'm in trouble. It's the same thing with the spiritual walk. I was not listening to any of that prior to 1988. Because somehow, someway, I thought I can control and manage this. And when my sponsor began to walk me through the steps, I compared it with my experience, like based on my experience. Great way to answer a question is to pause. Because right in the middle of the question and then the answer is the growth. The ego right away gives an answer. Yeah, I'm alcoholic. Well, wait, let's take a look at this. Based on my experience, that I experienced a phenomenon called craving, that when I drank alcohol, the craving was intensified, never satisfied. Yes. All the time, yes. Did it take me like to jails, institutions, almost death? Yes. Did I have control over how much I was going to take? No. Control over stopping and starting? Absolutely not. Because once I drink, I need a second drink. And once I have the second drink, the third one screaming louder than the first and second. It's called craving. It's an abnormal reaction. I got that. So it begs the question, if I know I'm going to get in trouble, and I know I can't stop when I want like civilians do, then why do I start in the first place? Most of us aren't stupid. Most of us are pretty bright and intelligent. Especially when it comes to stealing. We're really good at that. It was this thing called a mental obsession. And I can't outthink my own thinking. See, the same mind that tells me it's going to fill the hole is the very same mind that keeps digging the hole. I can't get out of my own way. And I try to figure this out and think positive thoughts and read the big book and read scripture and pray. And I'm still stuck with me because I haven't gotten rid of me yet. This is all filtering through this dangerous thing, a four-letter word called the mind. And for me personally, it's the greatest enemy ever to hit the planet. Until the transformation gives me a new mind and the old man dies and a new man appears. And that's the new man is what God created in the first place. But over years, I accumulate stuff. I accumulate attitudes, ideas, and belief systems about you, about me, about God, about everything. And I have no design for living that works, regardless of how wonderful my parents were. Our parents were. I'm stuck with a thing called alcoholism that I didn't ask for, and it does my thinking for me. I think I have thoughts. Thoughts have me. They hover over, they see an opening, they go in, and then they got me, and they ride with me. I can't believe I'm thinking if that's right. It's thinking for me. How can I get out of that? A moderate drinker and a hard drinker, the people they describe on page 20 and 21, can stop or moderate control. I tried that. No success. Then you get to a place, why we even control it? When the book says we try to control and enjoy, how could I enjoy something if I'm a glutton? I need all of it, and you can't have any. It's this mental obsession. Then I have this other thing. I don't believe we can ever be physically separated from that power which we come from. But there's a sense of separation from this power, which leaves me with me to do life, and I don't know how to do that. I'm the type of alcoholic. I need a double vodka to get out of bed in the morning just to go look in the mirror and face my own self, the demons. And if I'm not drinking, I need to do something to get in the way, a buffer, to go out there and do life. I cannot do it. I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. My book says that's drunk and sober, and I can fall into my ego will just open it up really nice. It'll seduce me into thinking, well, you're sober so long, so you can manage your life now. You can manage your career. You can manage your relationship. You can manage, period. And I cannot do it, because when I do it, everything blows up. And the first sign of it is fear and a lot of resentment and maturity, because you aren't doing what I ask you to do. Yeah. And what this work has allowed me to do is not have a God moment every so often, but allows us to have a direct encounter with God all the time. There's an undercurrent of godliness, even when we fly off the handle. That's our human condition. I'm broken. Even when I'm gripped with fear, even if, fill in the blank, there's an undercurrent of God all the time once I awaken. It's there all the time, but until I awaken, I don't even know it's there. Huh? Ever look at a newborn or a toddler? They ooze God. You look in their eyes, you get goofy. You say weird stuff to little kids. You talk to them, you play with them, you roll on the floor. You don't care, because that God seduces you. It's wonderful. You look in a child's eyes and you see God. We see ourselves. And by the time we get to AA, that's gone. The lights are out. And someone needs to turn the pilot light on. And what's really interesting, it comes through the wreckage of me. It comes through the wreckage of my life. It comes through the disintegration of me. It's just not going to happen by walking to an AA meeting. My book tells me I had to concede to my innermost self that I'm a real alcoholic. That concession is a soulful event. In fact, when I work with people now, I don't tell them, you know, you're alcoholic. I stopped doing that a long time ago. They need to make their own diagnosis based on the information, based on their experience. Yes, I'm like you. I'm an alcoholic, and I need to do what you're doing. That's a soulful event. When that drunk like me concedes, I'm alcoholic, and I cannot do this on my own. That feels lousy, but it's a tremendous amount of freedom we've been given. That's right thinking. That's when we open up. I pick up a drink at 14 years old, and as I said earlier, I had no clue the road I just stepped on, which was paved to hell. Okay. This pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That's the price paid, P-A-I-D. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I didn't see that coming. The same way I still can't see the drink coming. If the drink's across the street coming, suddenly he's walking my way. I can't see it. You can. I can't see it. I will tell you I'm fine. In the same way, I can't see God coming. I can't see a God experience coming. I'm chopping wood and carrying wood, saying, Father, aren't you listening? And then bang, it shows up. I couldn't see it coming. My job's not to see that. My job is to stay in the center of AA, practice fidelity to God, put no gods before my God, because if I do put anything before God, I will lose it and get drunk. That I've learned by my own experience and watching countless others. That's been my experience. First 9 pages of Bill's story, this is drunkologue. It's his 12-step call to me. And I read about how Bill was convinced he can do this on his own. How Bill says, that's it, I'm not drinking anymore, only get drunk the next day. how Bill knew he was licked and he's alcoholic only to get drunk again. How he cursed himself for being a weakling. I can't get past this bottle. And he knew it and he had to drink. Because the physical torment demanded he drink, and his obsession says, yeah, go ahead, drink. Until Bill has the white light experience. And Bill didn't see that one coming either. Bill thought he was about to have his last breath. And then God intervened because Bill was split wide open. Bill knew he was done. Because if that didn't happen, I don't even know if we'd have AA today. And we look at pages 9 to 16, and that's Bill's transformation. Page 13, where Abby gives him the steps, and we see a shift that happens to Bill. And how he went from being a selfish, self-centered, self-seeking drunk, where he said, I need to tell other people about this message. That's a shift. Page 62 talks about selfishness and self-centeredness. 63 is about what I can give to others. A shift that we need, must experience, but I can't do that on my own. It's got to happen with this God. Am I willing to submit to this God? 14 years old, get drunk on a corner in Brooklyn, drinking cold 45 beer. I was afraid to drink that night. Mostly afraid because my dad had warned me not to hang out with what he called the bums on the corner. My dad's famous line, we become a product of your environment. I must have heard that a billion times. I wasn't listening. I was just afraid of him. Terribly afraid of this man growing up. Scared the heck out of me. Intimidated me. Made a lot of mistakes with me too. So my dad was 100 feet tall when he told me not to drink. I says, I like to drink, but I'm not going to deal with him until this one Saturday night. And they were passing around cold 45 beer. And I put my hand in and I grabbed a quart. And I started to drink with little success. I didn't feel anything. I understand why you were so happy drinking beer. And I'm like, what's the big deal? But somewhere in there I went, this is a pretty big deal. You know, you start to feel that first, your first buzz. And everything kind of gets shiny and glossy and nice. And we get really good looking somewhere in there. And so do they. You know, I got to be as big as Alan that night. I was like 6'4", 250 walking around, all 5'7" of me, you know. The girls got prettier. I was able to talk to them finally. The music sounded better. I became a gangster that night. I thought I was a gangster. Became my corner. And these guys are here to pay my respects, kiss my ring. You know, she's looking at you like, look at this fool, and I'm going, she wants me. It was an innocent drunk, if you will. You know. But that's how the illness tricked me. We're going to give you a nice one. So all you're going to do for the next 15 years or so is try to get back to that first nice drunk. Whether you believe in Satan or something, what a great trick. What a great trick. I'm going to give you something nice. It's going to change your life. You're going to feel really good. It's seductive. And then you buy and you go, it's euphoric. Gotcha. Because now I'm on the path. Now I just dance with Diablo. It's all over. And the next morning when I woke up, I had no hangover. I didn't get sick on myself. No one was looking for me. I didn't owe anyone money on the street, which I was going to be borrowing money from the wrong people. I got in a lot of trouble on the street. There was nothing. I went down to the park and played ball. But when I walked into the park, my shoulders were this wide because I had a story. I had something. And underneath that was I had a panacea for my ills. Cold 45 beer was going to lubricate this terrible thing I was experiencing. And I think about a 14-year-old kid nowadays who needs a drink to do like there's something radically wrong with that. Yeah. Things weren't rosy in my home. My mom was alcoholic. My mom was addicted to pills. My mom visited more sanitariums than I did. My mom had nervous breakdowns regularly. My mom, I saw her in straitjackets. Yeah. My mom sitting on my lap when I'm 8 years old telling me, Mom wants to die. You okay with that? While she's got a drink about this big of Jack Daniels in it. Yeah. My mom would be passed out on the couch after wake her because I knew Dad was coming home from work. There'll be World War III in this house. Mom, you got to wake up. Does that make me alcoholic? Probably not. Did it contribute to my self-worth and my outlook on life? Absolutely. Going to meetings won't treat that. Going to therapy is not going to treat it. When I found out the, aha, this is why I'm so screwed up, I can change it. I can't. I don't have that kind of power. I didn't have the endurance to keep the change going. God could and would if he was sought. And I got drunk on weekends. Then it became during the week. I start to turn into a thief and a coward and start to steal from people who trusted me, my family, because that's what I do. I steal from people. And it was little things and then money. And I stole from my dad's checkbook. I got away with it. Stole another check, got away with it. I had a thing going on. And then he got a checking statement in the mail because I didn't know those things existed. I remember calling home. My brother says, the old man's looking for you. What did you do now? I was like, what's his problem? I stole from him. And my alcoholism is so narrow-minded and so self-absorbed, I couldn't see that my dad wasn't so much the money, as he told me years later, is that my son stole from me. See, the thing about harms to others, I can look as, well, I stole from you, here's your money, have a nice life. And he's looking at it like, you crush me with that. It's an outside hurt, but an inside wound. I couldn't see that. Why would my alcoholism give me any sense of compassion? That's not its job. When I got into treatment, I was stoic. I was numb. I was cold. You cried in group. I have no time for this. You laughed in group. What are you laughing about? There was no one home. That's what alcoholism does to me while I'm alive. And all I can think is, I got to get a drink and I'll go back to group. I made my first treatment center and I did 28 days. And in 28 days, I worked out and fell in love regularly. Yeah. You know, rehab romance. She's it. This is going to work. It's God's will, number one. You know. And I found out she was fooling around with everybody else in treatment center. Maybe I'm not that important. And I got out and got drunk that day. I've been in 7 treatment centers, and my first 6, I managed 2 days of continuous sobriety. That's over a whole bunch of years. And 6 out of 7 treatment centers. What I pull off on my own is 2 days continuous sobriety because I'm an alcoholic. I need to drink. I must drink. And when we're sober, it doesn't mean we don't have alcoholism. I have alcoholism, not wasm. I come to meetings to stay sober and help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. First thing is sobriety. Stay sober. Because I have alcoholism, not alcohol wasm. I need to be in the middle of this. I need to have a God. I need to go through the steps to treat that. Because what I will do is go on sex sprees, food sprees, money sprees, spending sprees, gambling sprees, any kind of spree. It's alcoholism. It's the drink. It's the double vodka. And when you tell me that, I say, what are you talking about? I'm not drinking a drug. And yes, you are. And I emerge remorseful with the firm resolution not to do it again. I'm right back in doing something else. I have to. Because just sitting on a couch all alone with this, I can't bear it. I got to do something, some sort of buffer between me and the world out there. Because deep down inside, I know I can't do it. I start to cherish, you know, customs. I start to cherish the old days. I start to cherish all the stuff and I protect it. And if I can only get back there when times were good and you can't come in unless I let you, and I have these memories of how it was, it's gone. I would insulate myself in early sobriety too with things. Look good. I like getting dressed. I get dressed for me and out of respect for AA, but I was always getting dressed for you. So you would say, you look good. Okay, good. Whew. I would insulate myself with how I looked, how I sounded, what I drove, where I lived. Say the right things to get positive affirmations. Say the right things to get an attaboy and approval. Always look good, sound good, be good, be good, be good all the time. Insulate myself with all this stuff because deep down inside, I knew if one of those things got removed, I'm down on my knees, I'm nothing. And if you find out, you'll know I'm nothing. Keep insulating. And all that does is remove me from God. And God will remove all of it anyway. My experience has shown that anything I put before God, he's going to remove it. I'm not going to like it. And I can't even see the godliness in it. But it's like having a child and they run across the street. Mama's going to grab him by the arm and pull him back. And the kid thinks, you're ruining my good time. No, mama loves you that much. She doesn't want to see harm to you. I'm pulling you away from what you want. Why do I think at my age, I'm embarrassed to say I'm going to be 60. My Lord, have mercy. that I'm any bigger than a child in the eyes of God. I don't mean immaturity-wise, but just his child. My dad's 80 and change. I'm 60. My dad still worries about me as his son. Why would God be any different? My dad still tries to keep me out of harm's way. Why would God be any different? And I can interpret that with the mind and say, God's not being fair. But I live life forward and understand it backwards. When I get to the other side, I say, oh my God, it's a good thing there's a God. Good thing he did that for me. Because if it was my way, I'd be drunk or out of AA. Or worse. For someone who's non-alcoholic, the spiritual path is drastic. It's revolutionary, won't take it. Because that person still has power, choice, and control over when they're going to drink and how much they're going to drink. But for the real alcoholic, the spiritual path is still drastic and revolutionary, but I must have it. Because I need to be convinced on my own power, I cannot do this. And it's come down to that. Of myself, I am nothing. The Father doeth the works. The last thing the ego wants to hear. But do I get that at a soulful level? Of myself, I am nothing. The Father doeth the works, including getting dressed to come to a meeting. Marion laughs at me because I go in my closet. Okay, God, what are we wearing? She heard me say that one time. God, what are we wearing? What pleases you? Wear that. Okay. I don't like that. Wear it. Okay, God, get me to the meeting. Let's roll. Okay, God, get me home safe. I mean, that's my walk. Doesn't make me better than, it's not perfect, it's just my walk. Because when I don't do that, I'm running on me now. And funky things can happen. Because that other guy, the alcoholic Peter, he's not dead, he's dormant. I'm not cured. I'm recovered, not cured. That guy's laying in the bushes somewhere. I say, got him. He didn't pray. He didn't write inventory. He didn't call a sponsor. Move a little bit close, a little bit close. I can't see it. Step one says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, dash, that allows them to become unmanageable. And they're looking at past tense. This is what we experienced. Powerless over alcohol means I don't have power. Which means I don't have choice, which means I don't have control. I don't have power, choice, control. Those words are interchangeable. That's in the mind before I even pick up a drink. I'm doomed. The relapse happens while I'm sitting in a meeting sober. The relapse has happened. It's called untreated alcoholism. Perhaps I'm living all over page 52. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. I'm acting out in a lot of ways that if I get caught, oh my God. And I think I won't get drunk on that. And alcoholism loves the deception. Then I don't have power, choice, control in the body once I pick up a drink, and that's been my experience. Pick up one, must have two. Need to have the third, and the fourth and fifth are screaming louder than the first few because it's on, and no one can pull me out. Even if I get arrested, they throw me in the tank. When I get out, I'm going right to the liquor store. Not going home, going to the liquor store. Did you ever get arrested? I was sitting in the Tombs one time. And I was addicted to some narcotics along with drinking. And I'm going through withdrawal. Horrible time. I get to see the judge. They release me ROR. I don't go home. Whew, never going to do that. I went right back to Alphabet City and did what I had to do. I'll figure it out later. I mean, that's how I op. That's how we operate. It said that Eliza become unmanageable. And I was under the belief system that I was homeless. Been arrested. And I was living the life of a bum, so when I come into AA and I have clean clothes, I'm bathing and eating, and I'm not drunk, my life is now manageable. I have a little job, I have a little money, a little AA relationship going on. I look sober, I sound sober, I'm clean, my life is now manageable. And to some extent, it was. But that's not what they're talking about. What they're talking about, unmanageability, which step one is the lack of power, choice, control, that I don't know what the day looks like when a drink shows up and I'm drunk and I can't stop it. But it's going to show up, unless. Step one tells someone like me, Peter Marinelli, you are drinking. You are going to drink. I don't care how long you're sober. I don't care how much you love your life. You are getting drunk. Period. Non-negotiable. You're an alcoholic. Unless I seek this guy with the desperation for drowning man and I have this vital transformation. If not, I'm getting drunk. And my mind says, no, you're not. You're special, unique, I love you. There's that little dash in the middle. of these two thoughts. I just thought it was a dash. And then my sponsor showed me years ago what the dash is. If that dash became a vertical line, it shows what I can suffer from quickly. It blocks off the first half from the second half. So what I do is keep life looking manageable. Get the nice clothes, get the good job, get the good relationship, get money in your pocket, look good, sound good, be good, look good, sound be good. Look, my life's manageable. I'm keeping it manageable. I'm trying to manage external conditions, which are a liability anyway. I'm trying to keep the external world, everything looking good. See, life's manageable. I can walk into the meeting, Jody Oldtimer says, kid, you're doing good. See, my life's manageable. That's not what it means, because I can't see the first half of the first step that tells me you're drinking. Regardless of how good things are out there, Pete, you're drinking, you're alcoholic, because you can't control this. And I go from little thinking to obsession drunk. Or wind up in a doctor's office, tell them I have terrible anxiety, and start getting medicated. And down here, they love to medicate. You know, you twist your ankle, gives you 3-year worth of Vicodins for a twisted ankle. You know, I'm in recovery. That's okay. Here's another script. I have anxiety, doc. Here's a script. I'm nervous in the morning. Here's a script. And all I'm suffering from, in most cases, not all cases, is untreated alcoholism. And I can't see the first half of the first step. And I'm right back to the way it was. Only worse, because I tasted the honey. It's called AA. And I know there's a solution down the block. And I can't get there. There's a meeting down the block, and I keep going into the bar across the street. They're meeting over there. I can hear them. I can see them. And I keep going into the bar. I'd like to go in there, and I can't, because I need a drink, and my mind says we're drinking. I can't negotiate with that. And this power that we're never really separated from, we have no connection with anymore. And alcoholism owns me. When the book says alcohol was my master, as quicksand stretched around me in all directions, I had met my match. I'd been overwhelmed. That's a great description of what I was up against in 1988. I had no clue I was going to land in AA because I knew this didn't work. I hated church. I hated God. And God said, it's okay. Hate all you want. I'm placing you here. And what I'm clear about today, years later, and not only my purpose, but who I serve, and what I'm supposed to do while I'm here. On June 23rd, 19, God says, you're going to work for me now. You can have a house, if I say so. You can have the apartment, the car. It's mine. But your primary purpose, I'm going to bring you to this side, is to go get my kids and bring them back here. Regardless if they're right, that's your job till I call you home. It's a design for living that works. It's a manner of living. It says that. It should continue for a lifetime. This isn't a day at a time. And that's God's deal with me. You take care of my kids, I'll take care of you. But I can only take care of others if I'm spiritually fit, because I can't transmit something I don't have. And sometimes I will what I do, and it's just untreated alcoholism. So 43 pages talk about this step one. 17 to 23 is the body. 23 to 43 is the mind. More about alcoholism specifically talks about the mind, this predator, this thing that'll take me back to that which is killing me over and over and over again. It'll pretty up a junkyard to get me back. It'll come in a relationship. It'll come in money. It'll come in stuff. I need to be recognized. I see a lot of this in AA lately. Everyone wants to get behind a podium, be a speaker. I need to be famous in an anonymous program. I don't understand this. I need to be somebody. I need to be somebody in AA. Why not stand at the door and wait for a new one, take him in the back, quiet, work with them, and do God's work? And that's just that self-centered ego, again, showing up sober. I need to be somebody. Just same thing out there. I need to walk in the barn. Everyone knows me. I need to walk in AA. I need to have everyone bow. You're here now. That's sad. It's pathetic. It's untreated alcoholism. So what I've learned is this, and I hope to get there one day. The self-centered, self-seeking, greedy man expects everything, wants everything, goes home empty all the time. The humble man who walks in the light expects nothing, wants nothing, goes home full all the time. The humble man never claims to be a spiritual anything. He's still seeking. The other guy claims he's spiritual, and he's not. This is a great quote. Woe to the man so possessed that he believes he possesses God. The arrogance that I know God now. I know what God's will is for you. Really? Would you have a meeting with him? Lunch with God? How'd that go? So I chop wood and carry water. I'm alcoholic. And I've been made very clear on the sprees that can happen while sober, based on my experience. And I'm very clear that if I pick up a drink and I don't have any power to stop that, that I won't stop drinking. And the only thing that stops that is this power called God, because I'm alcoholic. And when I say I'm recovered, doesn't mean I'm non-alcoholic. I will have this till the day God calls me home. But I can die with alcoholism, or I can die from alcoholism, and I can die from alcoholism without ever putting a drink in me. And if we think about it, we never picked up the first drink drunk. But there we are. And so I do what I do. I learned to rely on people. I learned to be more transparent and let people know where I'm at. It's a tough task to be like Teflon. It's unrealistic. And somehow, maybe I'm more approachable that way. Here's the cracks in my armor. I'm weak flesh sold unto the slavery of sin. The things I want to do, I don't. And the things I don't want to do, I do. Because if I don't discuss that, if I don't write about it, if I don't call my sponsor, I have some current unmanageability going on and I can't tell you. And that's the great way for the ego start to build up again, huh? You know, the reason why we identify with each other, I identify with your story. She told my story. He told my story. I have the same resentment. I get that. I know what you... Then if you have the same story as me, how could it be my story? If I identify with that so much, how could it be yours? It's called alcoholism hovering over all of us. It's all alcoholism. What we're identifying with, what I'm identifying with, is alcoholism in you, is the same alcoholism in me. It just showed up in your life the way it showed up in mine. It's alcoholism, and we see it all the time. I don't want to go to a meeting and share my second column anymore. I want to go to a meeting and talk about the problem and the solution, because that's what AA is about. We come together with a common problem, and we're held together with the common solution. And that is what? This power called God, which, in my humble opinion, should be shouted from the rooftops all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not occasionally, and not to appear to be radical when you do. Because this whole thing in AA is about driving a drunk back to God, and when we do that, the ego dies a day at a time. That's all I got. Peace.
Let's thank the speaker one more time. And now I'd like to introduce Vinny to do the secretary's report.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Vinny, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, decline outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked John to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. John.
Hello, my name is John, and I am an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
1940s style Big Book sponsorship. From forward to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach to back to his loving arms. The statistics above show a 75%+ rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics in the room? All right. Anyone who needs a big book sponsor, is there anyone who needs a big book sponsor? If you could please raise your hand or get with someone after the meeting who was raising their hand. Please join us Monday nights, the Big Book Study meeting, where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship starts at 6:30, and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15 upstairs. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book Dictionaries for sale in the back. We have some group members back there that you could speak with. And we meet here every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Also, a quick reminder, there is a 75-foot no-smoking/vape zone in front of the doors. When you leave here tonight, do not light up or vape until you are 70 feet from the doors. Please smoke to the area to the left when you walk outside. We would really appreciate that, and thank you for your cooperation. And we will see you next week.
Ah, wonderful. We have all tonight's session and past podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. And I'd like to invite everyone, like he said, to the Monday night Big Book Study. It's just as good as this meeting. It's upstairs. We meet at 7:15. People usually arrive around 5:30 for meet and greets to talk to each other. And if whoever would like to thank our speaker can line up down the middle aisle. Now let's close out with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. I'm desperately in need of restoration. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. 'Cause they won't profit me anything.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted. See the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm about to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way. Flowers blooming all the time outside my door. But never before I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away and it's just about to smile. plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come out. Lessons when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright.
Oh man, going on 10 years old that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
As far as on your way.